my favorite neighbors. This is Sis.
This is Squirt. Go ahead.
Sometimes this happens to me, and when it does, I'm always, like, a little surprised because I am never on the cutting edge of any trend, and I am never ahead of any trend, and I'm usually, like, at least 2 years behind most of them. But I'm okay with that. That's just me. So what will sometimes occur is something that I am just coming into contact with, I will see repeated in multiple places within what I consider to be a short period of time. One of them is The Turn of the Screw, which is this short story by Henry James. And it's, I would put it in the same vein as like a Poe story or like a Hawthorne story, sort of like a gothic, dark story where the narrator's not necessarily reliable, either because they ultimately have something to hide or whatnot. And of course it deals with death and ghosts and big scary houses. But how I came to be into this world, or how it came into my purview, is so... Oh, God. Many, many, many years ago, after law school, I started reading Terry Pratchett, who wrote the Discworld series. Mm-hmm. And it was because I didn't want to read another law book and I wanted to read something funny. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading Discworld, and I haven't read them all, and I've read them sort of sporadically. But one of his Discworld books and Discworld characters is Hogfather, which is a sort of retelling, reimagined, goofy sort of Santa Claus story about, but you know, but in the Terry Pratchett way. So there's ghosts and there's death and there's murder and there's funny and there's gnomes and there's absurdity. We'll just stick with absurdity. Anyway, so BBC made two Terry Pratchett movies. They made one called The Color of Magic, which is based on his first Discworld book, and then they made another one called Hogfather. I couldn't get Color of Magic for some reason or other, but Hogfather was showing on Netflix, so I watched it. And I really liked it. It was a fun little movie, and I really actually think it fits just fine in the Christmas movie genre, and I intend to watch it every Christmas. But it also introduced Michelle Dockery to the world at large, but also to me. And I was like, oh, she's a really good actress.
Michelle Dockery.
Well, I'm about to tell you. Right. She's a really good actress. I really want to see more of her. Fast forward to last year, Downton Abbey. She's Lady Mary in Downton Abbey. And I was like, I know I've seen her before. Let me go back. I find that she was the girl in Hogfather. I'm like, awesome. And then I see she's done other movies for the BBC, one of which was The Turn of the Screw, which also had one of her co-stars from Downton Abbey, which I can't remember his name right now, but he plays the American heir, Matthew. Can't remember his actual name. I think it's Daniel something.
So he puts on an American accent?
Yeah, he's British.
Oh.
So I watched The Turn of the Screw, and it's this BBC adaptation of this gothic story. Essentially, this guy becomes the caretaker for two... his niece and his nephew. And he's like a London... This is, of course, back in, like, the 1800s. You know, very gothic. He's a little bit of a playboy. Doesn't really want to deal with them. So he keeps sending governesses down to the house where they live. The niece and the nephew live. And they're very young. And he keeps losing the governesses. They either quit or run away screaming. But the last one died. So he hires a new governess who is played by Michelle Dockery's character, or by Michelle Dockery. And of course, she asks the question that everybody asks, which is, what's wrong with the house? Or what's wrong with the children? And of course, he's like, nothing, but you just need to go there. They need a firm hand. And I really don't want to be disturbed. So I'm going to need you to really handle this. Mm-hmm. And he does it in sort of this way that is very enticing. And you want, as the governess, you want to be able to impress him, to show him that you can take care of the kids. So anyway, the governess goes down to the house, and the staff is all female, which is rare. It's this sprawling gothic stone thing where like electricity is non-existent and they still use candles and whatever. You know, they have a really old car and all of the staff are really cold to her. You know, they don't really talk to her. They don't interact with her. And then you meet the kids and the little girl is like creepy. She's wise beyond her years, but also eerie. And she says things that you wouldn't expect a child to say, like, you're not going to last long, or, you know, sort of all of the, like, the weird kid things. The boy is away at boarding school, but he's just been sent back home because he's been getting in fights and essentially gotten expelled. So in addition to governing them, she's also supposed to teach them and get them ready to go back to school. What you start to find out is there are ghosts. She starts to believe there are ghosts. The governess starts to believe there are ghosts in the house. And that in some manners, the ghosts have inhabited the children. And so the children don't, the ghosts want to be left alone. So they make the children do things that essentially run the governesses out. The staff has essentially been willing to let them continue. And then it ultimately, it takes a twist and it takes a turn, and I'm not going to spoil anything because it's actually probably a very well-written story. I haven't read the story, but the movie is very interesting. And so I'm not going to spoil any of that. But anyway, I watched and I was like, oh, okay. She did really well in this. I'm going to finish watching Downton Abbey and then I'm going to go on. And then I started reading Jennifer Cruzy's novels. And I've been sort of picking them up as they are available from my library. So not in any sort of specified order, not in any sort of specified plot, even though she doesn't write sequels or continuing stories. But just sort of whichever ones are available at the library, that's the one I pick up. And so I recently picked up her book called Maybe Next Time. I don't even know if it's like new or old or whatever, but I start reading it and I realize it's sort of a turn of the screw continuation story, which she's known for writing. I don't know if romance novel is still the politically correct term. Romantic novels. Novels with a love story. Let's just say that. I don't know. There's this whole drama about that. And so I was like, okay, fine. You know, I know what the story is, so I'm not going to get totally freaked out. And I'm going to read it because she does write really nice stories that I like about people falling in love, which I like to read. And I start reading it, and it's very much more along the lines of Turn of the Screw, and it's very much more along, and I'm like, any day now, she's going to build in the love story. Any day now, she's going to build in the love story. And I finally get, like, halfway through, and the love story hasn't been built in yet. And I'm just getting a little more frustrated. And finally, of course, I read the whole book, and it really was more of the story of the governess and the ghosts and whatever. And there's a love thread, but it's not a love story. But what surprised me was the fact that within, I would say, maybe 2 years, this story that I had never read, I'd never heard of, I had never read it in school when we were studying sort of Gothic literature, all of that, came into my life twice. And so I'm now curious as to whether or not this is going to continue. Like, am I in the fall TV? am I going to see a plot of one of my shows? And I watch a lot of shows that sometimes have absurd plots that sort of follows Turn of the Screw. And am I just going to be like, I can't believe this thing that I had never heard of. And again, I'm never ahead of a trend. So if I am, clearly the world is coming to an end. But if this is going to, like, become somewhere else, like if it's just that far off that some other person just discovered it and wants to share it with the world. But that's sort of, I'm just curious about that. And I'm curious about what other things sometimes come into, like, have you ever had this where, like, you'll see something and then see it repeated somewhere else?
Plot lots of times.
Like, and you didn't search it out. It just happened.
I don't know if I've been as aware. The only thing I can think of, and it's because a little bit because I search it out, but just because, but they repeat the plot often, and we've gone over this, is the Cinderella story and the Taming of the Shrew.
Right.
Like, those are two stories they repeat the plot very often, and it's the plot as old as time. And I also love those stories.
But so, I guess maybe this is closer to, like, if you had watched Mr. and Mrs. Smith mm-hmm. and been like, oh, good, spies who get married. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, you turned on the TV and it was fourth season of Chuck. And, like, you didn't seek it out, but you just, like, spies who got married on film. I liked it. I watched it. Whatever. Turn on the TV. Spies getting married on TV. Mm. Like, that sort of, like, coalesce. When there's nothing in the world to sort of say, this is the trend, you know?
No, I don't know. No,
okay. I'm just wondering. I wonder if any of our...
Well, things that were trending, speaking of, or that are coming back in full circle, the 90s.
Yay!
Are... retroing. And like a few weeks ago, Nickelodeon, Nick at Night, decided to play like their 90s show. Well, number one, on Nickelodeon, they're playing at night in general Buffy and Degrassi.
Yeah.
But in addition, they
Degrassi, the Next Generation, not Degrassi, the original.
No, yeah, Degrassi, the Next Generation. But then they decided to play, like, I think it was only for a week, like their 90s shows. So, like, Clarissa Explains It all mm-hmm. that. They didn't do You Can't Do That on Television, but I think, and Salute Your Shorts.
Oh.
They played them all, you know, kind of at night, and they were talking about this 90s trend. And that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But then, throughout my day, throughout this week, we kind of got into a discussion at my office about 90s teen movies that hold up. And okay. I don't know how we got there, but we started talking about 10 Things I Hate About You, mm-hmm. which is kind of more 2000, like late 90s, early 2000, but I still kind of put them in the 90s movie category.
Yeah.
But we were like, I was like, a couple people hadn't seen it, and a couple people hadn't. I was like, look, for a teen movie of that age, it was great. The only unfortunate bit is that each time I watch it, I cry for Heath Ledger. Mm-hmm. But, like, it still holds up. And then we kind of got into the discussion about, like, what other ones. We were like, She's All That is another one that holds up. And moved on to Bring It On. Mm-hmm. And we were like, these are all these movies. And people were like, I haven't seen that. It's like, you have to watch these as part of your repertoire. I mean, it's almost like for the 80s, you have to know your John Hughes. I feel like for these, you have to have known this is part of that education curriculum of these three movies. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I noticed, which I didn't really think about, is that Gabrielle Union is in all of them.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that either.
No, right? You're kind of like, whoa, wait a minute. She's in that. Gabrielle Union was in that. Gabrielle Union was
I hadn't even thought about that. That's absolutely right. She's been in a lot of, Yeah.
But so my question is that are there other 90s teen movies that you feel have held up, like, through that test of time? And they all kind of have that same end of year feel. Mm-hmm. I know that this one is only on my high horse because I know other people, not high horse, but my list, and other people didn't like that much. It didn't do too well in the studio. I don't think it did too well on DVD. And maybe it's simply because it was like on cable and I watched it a gazillion and a half times. Mm-hmm. But Drive Me Crazy is one of the ones that, like, it'll come on. Adrien Grenier, loved him. What did I first see him in, though? I didn't see him first in that.
It wasn't that? Because I think that was the first time I saw him.
No, I saw him in this movie where he played, like, the son of a tranny. And it was really good. Or a father who was, like, gay and, like, ended up going cross-country. And then I saw him, you know, in this film. And now he's blown up and he's on Entourage and all that type of craziness. But, like, I liked that film. And it holds up for me. I guess other people maybe...
Hang on. I just looked up Gabrielle Union, and now I have to go back. She was apparently in Malibu Shores.
Get out!
I am not kidding! Now I have to go back and see what episode this was. I have to... See, I'm going to have to go back into my episodes. I'm just going to have to go back into there. I mean, there's no way. But yes, apparently she is everywhere.
Yeah.
And she's quiet about it. But yeah, she's everywhere.
Yeah, and all of those kind of, I feel like, iconic generation-defining films.
Yes.
You know, like if, you know, from the age of, like, it was a 13-year-old to the... 20 or so year old watching these films. They came out in that age frame, and they were kind of like your fun summer films. And they all, like I said, had that similar plot. The one that I didn't like, that I felt didn't last, was Get Over It. I have the soundtrack to it, but because I liked the soundtrack. Vitamin C was on the soundtrack to that.
Yes.
But like that film didn't hold up in that genre. But, you know, other ones did. And I was like, what are those late 90s like teen films? And they did. They all had that same feel to it. And some of them stuck, and obviously, and some of them didn't. But I definitely think 10 Things, She's All That, Bring It On, classics.
Yeah, I'd have to think. You'd have to give me a minute as to like which ones still hold up, which ones still amuse me.
I didn't like Get Over It. One that I thought would stick, but I feel didn't. But a lot of people came out of was the one with like Seth Green and Lauren Ambrose.
Oh, Can't Hardly Wait.
Can't Hardly Wait. But for some reason, it just didn't. It didn't live up to what I wanted it to be.
Right.
And so I feel like it didn't last with the group, but loads of people were in that
strong cast.
Movie.
A really strong cast.
And so I wanted it to be a little bit better.
Gosh, I'm going to have to think. Which ones? Let's see. Okay, so mid-90s, what was I watching? Well, of course, there was Clueless, which could not have been better.
Yeah.
I'm upset I just took down all the stuff from my wall. Because I could look up there and get references. Well, and Buffy.
Yeah.
Buffy still holds up, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of humor. I was actually thinking about Hackers, and I would love to say that it holds up, but I actually worry that it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched it again.
Yeah.
But it was so very important for the time that it came out.
Yeah.
And it was so very a part of the time that it came out that it probably doesn't hold up. I remember, here's one I hope doesn't hold up, and I would consider this 90s. I actually take it back. It probably holds up now. I didn't get it when I first saw it, which was Reality Bites. And then
that was early 90s.
That was early 90s. I think I was too young. Mm-hmm. I think I didn't really understand where the story was going. And I kept watching it, waiting for it to go the way I wanted it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not do that. And so then I just decided I didn't like it. But then I rewatched it, I think, in our last year of law school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh my God, this movie is so very, very pivotal. So I think when I finally let the movie be the movie that it was, it was much better. But I bet you that probably still, to some extent, holds up. Maybe not as strongly because so much has changed.
Yeah.
What else?
Another one that I watched, which doesn't fit in the genre, like the genre of the end of year kind of party, because the movies I'm describing, they all kind of have that fun light teen group of people, and they're like at least 3 to 6 characters that develop and change in all of those. They're two main, mostly, the love interest, and then they're the side characters that you fall in love with. But the one that I did like that still holds up, and I didn't want it to hold up because I don't know why. I just didn't want this. I thought it was so sappy. But anyway, was A Walk to Remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time it comes on cable, like, I sit down and watch it, and I cry every time Mandy Moore dies.
Yeah.
I do. And, like, and it just was one of the few ones that, and it fits. It's a high school movie, and so it does fit as far as that vein goes. And so, yeah, so I think it fits in that genre as the romantic one for the high school movie, like the love story meaning movie love story, quote unquote. So it's like love story in high school, you know, being loved, that means never having to say you're sorry. But that one still holds up for me. I still watch it. I still, you know, am with it.
Yeah. I wonder, because there's one that still holds up for me, but I don't know if it really was important to anybody else but me, which was Now and Then. Now, of course, I can think of all the ones that didn't hold up, and I remember loving them and then going, oh, should I buy it on DVD, and essentially coming to the conclusion I never wanted to see it again, which was, I remember being bereft at Far and Away.
Yeah.
And but like I have never watched it since that first showing. But I was like, oh my god, this is the best love story ever, and it's so beautiful. And I just never watched it again.
But that also wasn't teen.
No, but I don't, did it have to, was that your
Well, our
question?
Genre was kind of like those teen
the
movies.
Teen movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I would have to think on that one. I don't know. I might have to come back. I almost want to, like, look over into my DVDs and see what I have. You know what? Actually, I picked a movie that holds up. And actually, I would even say this series holds up. Mighty Ducks.
Yes.
Mighty Ducks holds up.
It does.
Even
Every
from
time.
The first one.
Yes.
Which, teeny tiny Joshua Jackson.
Yeah.
But and of course, the third one, it just wasn't that strong of a movie.
Yes.
But it does hold up.
It does. It does. And you, every time it comes on, I get, like, excited about it. And did you know they really didn't do, I feel like they didn't do We Are the Champions until D2.
Yeah, no, that wasn't, yeah, that was.
But it's,
D2.
Like, associated with, like, the whole entire.
The whole entire franchise,
series.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh. But yes, Mighty Ducks still holds up.
Yes, it very much does. But, and I think that is the one without Gabrielle Union, although we can try and find, we need to, like, broadcast this. I don't think anybody else has picked up on this trend.
That Gabrielle Union
is in all the teen movies. She's every freaking where. Or if not, she wasn't that age.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But she's, I never realized how everywhere
and
she was.
We were just sitting there, because I think we were just, because when we were talking about the movies, we were just spouting off the cast and people who have spiraled out and grown to other things. They're like, yeah, Julia Stiles was in it. And, and Anna Chlumsky, who's, now
my girl.
Other,
yeah, I
yeah,
never
she's
watched
now
that.
On some other show. Not Anna Chlumsky. Alex Mack. Like,
oh my
she,
god.
Yeah, we were like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And Rachel Lee Cook, Freddie Prinze. And so we were talking about all this stuff, and we were like, Gabrielle Union. Gabrielle Union.
Gabrielle Union. Yeah.
We're like, wait a minute.
Yes.
She's
wow.
In every single freaking film. But they were all so spectacular and so feeling that feel. Like, it's as much, like I was saying, as much as John Hughes in My Frame of Mind embodies 80s teen films, like, 10 Things, She's All That, Walk to Remember, Mighty Ducks,
Clueless.
Clueless embody that mid to late 90s teen film. And they and I feel like if I were to create a curriculum, that would need to be watched also. And like, and we can go backwards, but like, I think American Graffiti embodies, you know, and I don't know why I like it so much, because really nothing happens, and it's a lot of talking, and a lot of talking I don't get.
Right, like, it's a lot of slang.
But, like, for some reason, like, it's on, and I will watch it.
Now, see, I brought this up earlier, but this, I mean, maybe it was just me. I mean, and I am a little emotionally stunted, I get that. But Casper, as a mid-90s movie, still holds up for me.
Mm.
It's still, I still feel all of that frustration. Mm. I still feel all of that longing. Mm. Of course, it has the most beautiful line ever.
Yeah.
It, you know, and it's just the, it is the ultimate 90s movie to me. Actually, speaking of 90s things that hold up, I haven't rewatched it since I got them for you that Christmas, but, and I don't think I really watched them then, but the My So-Called Life popped into my head the other day, and of course it was the episode with the angel, and I was thinking about that scene of How Did You Die? But I was like, I wonder if I rewatched it, how I would feel, because I remember I got them for you, and you rewatched it, and you were like, oh my god, I'm so back there.
They're on Hulu.
I know they're on Hulu. Speaking of, though, not a movie, but Daria. Maybe, I guess, at this point, a year ago, I just rewatched all of the Darias. They hold the F up. And they are so funny and so good. And, oh, my God. Although, they're talking about possibly redoing them. And I mean, that's fine. They managed to do a good job in the 90s with the character. It's just, she's not pissed. I mean, she is pissed off, but she's not pissed off. Like, she's just that kid who's like, calls it as she sees it.
Well, I feel like whenever they redo stuff, like, if they redo it, I'm on the bandwagon, specifically with the comic books, etc., of reinventing, because, like, they don't need to bring back 90s Daria. Like, because
well,
she...
Well, actually, it wouldn't hurt.
But no, but she doesn't... Because personally, I feel they have another venue. I feel... And I can't remember her name at the moment, but I feel the lead in Awkward...
I was thinking that, too.
...is, like, they've done it. Like, she's Daria of this generation.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not as much of an outcast. She's not as much of a depressive downer. That's true. But this is the equivalent for this group, and I don't think they need to bring back the 90s one. She was fine for the 90s.
Yeah.
And so, that's,
I would hope that, actually, I was thinking the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? She's pretty good. The actress in Awkward is pretty good as Daria. But it wouldn't hurt, but just air Daria, just saying. It would work. It would still be funny. You'd still have an audience. It's still good.
And I have to say, speaking of Awkward, just plug out, much props to MTV for it. I think it's a great show. I think they actually hit it on the head. I'd given up on them with their dumbass teen moms and 16s and pregnants and reality TV shows where people spit and bite each other. I was like, really, MTV? You're not showing videos anymore and then you're showing this crap. But they managed to, I feel, with Awkward, like, get it right. Mm-hmm. And just give the teens, because MTV was music television, and like, for a minute, it was like teen television. It was like, okay, so I'm a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old. I don't want to be pandered to, but I want to watch some fun, edgy shows. And MTV would be where you would go, because mm-hmm. it would be like you'd have your music videos and then you'd have your shows like Daria, like Beavis and Butthead. You know, those were like the shows that didn't necessarily pander to you, but were appropriate age-wise. And then we ended up with this, and even Real World when it began.
Yeah.
And then they ended up with these reality TV shows and all this crap, and I feel like Awkward is back at that. It's, okay, we're not pandering to you.
Yeah.
We are going to take you seriously, teenagers, and give you a show that is witty and smart and somewhat fun, and you can get into. And I think they did it right.
Yeah.
So the very last thing that I wanted to talk about is, I mentioned this, I think, on the last podcast and or last week, and I don't know if it made it to the final cut, but Jay-Z and Kanye West released a new song called Otis, and they've released a new album, and they have released a new song called Otis, and now that I have the terminology to describe it, the song, I've heard it a couple times, I've seen the video a couple times, I've closed my eyes and listened to the song, because that's part of it. And of listening, because sometimes the video distracts you.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, off the bat, not music for my hypothalamus.
Mm.
Like, it just doesn't hit you. The first time, because, in all fairness, the first time I listened to it, it didn't hit me. I listened to it by watching the video, though. And I was like, well, maybe it's I got distracted by the video, because I feel like the video is kind of stupid. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I feel like maybe I got distracted by the video. So I listened to it again, and I, without looking at it, just mm-hmm. listening to the music. And it still didn't hit my hypothalamus. I can appreciate it a little bit more than I've heard it four or five times,
mm-hmm.
but it's not, I feel like good music hits your hypothalamus the first time you hear it.
Yeah.
And
well,
okay.
That's the goal.
Yeah. And okay music, four or five times you hit it, and music that's crap, you just never, never end up liking,
yeah.
regardless of how many times you listen to it. And I think part of it too is that, like, maybe it's just because we like classic music, but they sample Otis Redding's Try a Little Tenderness.
Mm.
And I don't know if this is part of their drive as far as the song goes, but the sample that they take is, you know, the song's crescendo,
okay.
and get better. I mean, they start off and then they get, you know, louder and more poppy, and the energy grows it with the song.
Mm-hmm.
The parts that they sample are like kind of the last high energy parts of the song.
Okay.
Without getting to Try a Little Tenderness.
Okay.
So, number one, like, you're listening to it, you're like, okay, nah. It's like you just don't get to, because you want to sing mm-hmm. Try a Little Tenderness, because that's where you go with the song. And then they just start rapping, and they continue, like, their chorus, quote unquote, because they really don't have a chorus.
Mm-hmm.
But their chorus is the sampling of this Try a Little Tenderness, and it just leaves you every time. So I feel like that's a disappointment. And then listening to a part of it with both of these men, both Jay-Z and Conway, I feel are very good lyricists, modern
mm-hmm.
poets. I think they are very good with the wordplay, that they can write these really great rhymes. I just don't feel that this is their best set. I didn't think the rhymes were that great. I didn't think the wordplay was that great. Just how they were constructed and developed, did not impress me. So even on top of the fact that you let me down without me getting to the crescendo, then the words don't do anything for me either. And so that's my review. It does not hit my hypothalamus.
And I didn't care, as I said last week. I didn't care that they were releasing it. I didn't care that the music was coming out. And, to be perfectly honest, I'm for big superstars, I'm not sure how much of making music for them is actually making music versus just saying something. Like, I don't know if did the song have like a message or a theme, or like was it like love somebody or stop hating each other?
No.
Stop hating on me.
In all fairness, I really can't tell you.
Because
like their phrases went into each other and I wasn't able to deconstruct like everything that they said. So I really don't know, and nothing stuck. So
I'm okay with not having heard that. Okay, so are you all done?
Yep.
All right. So the last thing we have to do, because the book has been recovered, is... I'm sorry, I'm going to burp. Okay, maybe not. Pop culture. People's pop culture moment. Okay, and I have picked one that I don't know. Which is 203. It's in the year 1982. So you were a grand total of one.
Woohoo!
Real Men Don't Eat Quiche. Bruce Feirstein's book, subtitled A Guidebook to All That Is Truly Masculine, condemns gold chains, yogurt, and meaningful dialogues, and stays on the bestseller list for more than a year. Okay. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
I've never heard of this either. But this looks like... Okay, so 1982 is when this occurred. It almost looks like one of the first things that people are going to go back to and look at and go, this started the trend of men are from another planet. And, you know, they're very, very different from women and therefore need to be treated differently from women. Which is weird to me that that has become acceptable when women said that, it was like, okay, well, we'll give you your own thing that is less than. You know, like when women were like, look, we don't do things the way you do things. We don't pee the way you pee. We don't, we care. We emote versus direct. Then they were like, okay, well, then you can do 1, 2, and 3, but we're always going to rate these as less than. And then I would guess that in 1982, or maybe even before, but in 1982, Real Men Don't Eat Quiche starts this, men, this is what you are supposed to do, but it doesn't turn anything around. It doesn't say, if you do what I tell you to do, which is not eat quiche, not wear gold chains and everything, you are greater than. But it really has seemed like every 5 years or so, something comes up to say, men are different and we need to let them be different. And it just sounds like a mix of boys will be boys, which is bullshit, or a don't make me do the thing that I don't want to do, but I won't tell you I don't want to do it. But just assume that because I'm a man, I don't want to do it. And it just, I wouldn't even say it reinforces ideas about sexuality, but it just more imparts one or five guys' ideas about sexuality and sexual images, like what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, on the whole world. And then we spend the next 5 years trying to debunk that and say, no, real men do eat quiche, and some men do wear gold chains, and some women do drive trucks. And it has nothing to do with whether or not they're men or women. So I don't know. I don't know where that is. I definitely don't remember it. I don't think that book would have made it past our threshold if it had come into our house. And not just from a 2-year-old you or a 3-year-old me. I think mom would have killed dad if he had brought that, tried to bring that into the house.
Yeah.
So, anything else?
No, I have absolutely nothing to say on it. Like, yeah. I just have no idea. The only thing, I guess, if I were to add something to this is that I think I've said this. a few years ago, after going on a couple bad dates, I decided to read self-help books for men on dating, because I really wanted to know what they were told. I was like, this is ridiculous. I was like, seriously. And the one thing I have to say is that when I went to the bookstore to look for them, I was like, where are the self-help books? And they're like, they're here. Where are the dating books? They're here. And it was like, they were like three shelves of self-help books on dating. And there were two complete shelves dedicated to women. And then, like, in the bottom corner of the third shelf, there were like five books written for men. I was like, this is ridiculous. Yes. There are all these books to tell women how to date or be in a relationship better, and five for men? So then, of course, I had to go on Amazon. And I was like, and I found a few more, but not a whole lot more. So, but that one did not come up in my purview. Maybe they don't talk about dating, obviously. Maybe they're just talking about how to be a man. But that, so that's what I was looking for. But I still, the only interesting tidbit I would say is that finally a book for men. If it was written for men, because there are a lot of books written by men for women to tell them how to date.
That's stupid.
Yeah, there are lots of them that are like that. But, you know, very few books for men, which I think is a sign, at least because I'm a woman, so I don't know this, as to how non-introspective men are. That the fact that they're not books written for them, because men won't buy them. Like, you know, there's no introspection. Like, okay, so I went on a date with this girl, and she's never calling me back, and I have no idea why. Not going to think about it. Just pick a different girl.
Right.
With a woman, it's like, okay, I went on a date with this guy. I preface this by saying, I went on a date with this girl, and I don't know, did something really rude and disgusting, and she didn't call me back, whatever. Whether a woman's like, I went on a date with this guy, I did something rude and disgusting, I don't know why he's not calling me back, a woman would be like, what did I do?
Right.
And introspectively figure out, oh, that thing I did was rude and disgusting, had no clue, how about I not do that next time? Guys, I feel, are not that introspective, thereby no need for them to do read these books. Because, and I say this because I read five or six books for men on dating. And no lie, every single one of these books had a chapter on hygiene. Some two or three chapters on hygiene. Now, in my personal point of view, I feel like you got that covered in kindergarten.
I have heard from so many girls where they're like...
And it's not even like basic hygiene, like, you know, go to the store and find a cologne that works with you. Don't always pick the first one. Because I feel like those things girls learn for perfume. Like, you learn that certain perfumes work with your body chemistry, certain don't. I could see guys not knowing that.
Right.
No. It is... brush your teeth. I'm totally not kidding.
Yeah.
Comb your hair. Make sure your fingernails are clean. I was like, are you kidding me? You need a book to tell you this? And not just like in passing, like this is your checklist. It is a whole chapter describing the necessity of it.
Yeah.
So I feel like guys are stunted as far as that goes, and they don't look at that. Like, and so guys must show up on dates with like wearing smelly clothes, unbrushed teeth. And you know what? That's true. Guys have shown up on dates wearing smelly clothes, and I was like, "Really? You didn't think to bathe?" just at all. So, but in that vein, I feel like guys just aren't introspective, so they wouldn't read these books. So, that is my my take on that, cuz I didn't read that book, but at least it was a book written for a guy giving them bad advice maybe, but but, you know.
Okay, so is there anything you're looking forward to before we record
again? I'm looking forward to possibly, if the universe will allow us to, see Crazy Stupid Monkey Love.
We are going to get this title wrong every time.
Or the Crazy Love Stupid, Stupid Love Crazy.
Stupid Crazy Love.
Stupid Crazy Love, because this never gets it right.
Crazy Stupid Love.
But we have been trying to see Crazy Stupid Love since it's come out.
We have.
And the universe has just managed to say, nope, not your option, like, to go see it. Just random stuff has gotten in our way of seeing this film.
Random unforeseen stuff.
Exactly. So I hope that I'm looking forward to possibly this week getting a chance to see that film.
Okay. I'm actually looking forward to, because it's on my nightstand as I speak, but I can't see the title from here, the final book in the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants series. something, it's, I think it's called like Sisterhood Everlasting,
yeah,
or like something like that. Anyway, but I just got it, and I'm looking forward to reading it. I'm hoping that it does a really good job of pulling everything together, but also doesn't make me want to go back and read the initial ones, because I kind of don't have time for all that. So, if you want to continue any of the conversations that we've started here, you can follow us at My Fave Neighbors on Twitter or through our blog, which is myfavoriteneighbors.blogspot.com. This is Sis.
And this is Squirt.
Thanks for stopping by. You'll know us when you see us.